Welcome to the Hill City Church Podcast. We are a church family located in Springfield, Missouri. You can learn more about us and support our ministries at hillcitysgf.org.
Good morning, Hill City. You all can go ahead and grab a seat. My name is Aaron Nelson. I'm the SALT Company Director here, and I'm getting ready in July to finish up my fifth year working with SALT. And so before we get into it this morning, I just want to spend a moment and just say thank you to this room. Usually on a Sunday, they're all at spring break right now, but the first third of this room is filled with college students. And I just want to thank all of those here who have faithfully loved the next generation of Jesus followers at this church. People have loved, discipled, generously given to support college students getting to be a part of God's major story that's going on in humanity. So I just want to say thank you from the depths of my heart. And even though they might not know it, they're incredibly thankful for you as well. Before we get into it, let me pray for us, and then we're going to hop into Genesis. God, I thank you for another day we get to come together and just learn from you. Learn from your goodness. Learn from your kindness. Lord, as we wrap up seeing Abraham today, may his story inspire us not to be more like him, though, but to be more like you, to see ourselves step into greater faith, even in the midst of trials, even in the midst of hardship. May we continue to grow in what it means to follow you and be faithful to you. In your name I pray, amen. All right, so a few weeks ago, I took on a big task, and I decided I'm going to watch all the Star Wars episode 1-9 as fast as possible. All right, I'm on episode 7 right now. And just so you know, if you're one of those people who's like, don't do spoilers, listen, the movie came out 50 years ago. All right, so I'm going to give away some things right now. I'm just going to ask you to be okay with it. All right, so one of the things I love about Star Wars is the character development you see happen throughout it. So the first three episodes, we follow this guy named Anakin Skywalker, and we kind of follow his process of becoming the Jedi everyone thinks he should be. But by the final episode of those three movies, he actually never becomes that Jedi. In fact, he becomes the opposite. He becomes Darth Vader. There's your spoiler. First of all, there's your first spoiler. He becomes Darth Vader. All right, and at the end of that movie, he has two kids, Luke and Leia. And we get into the next three episodes of Star Wars, and we actually follow his son, Luke, becoming the Jedi he's supposed to be. All right, and this whole storyline in these middle three movies is watching, does Luke beat his dad, Anakin, or Darth Vader at the end of the movies? We get to the final episode, and Luke comes face to face with his dad as well as his dad's master, Darth Sidious. And there's this big fight, and it's like the climax of the middle three movies, Luke and his dad, Anakin, and Luke beats Anakin in the fight. It's an amazing scene. And it's like, okay, we reached the pinnacle. Here's what I love. This isn't actually what I think is the pinnacle of the first six movies. Because there's this moment when Darth Sidious is upset because Luke's not going to kill his father because he's the Jedi he was supposed to be. And so he starts doing like the lightning out of the fingers thing to him. All right? And Darth Vader gets up. He's one arm short, but he gets up anyways. He picks up Darth Sidious and he throws him to a hole. Saves Luke. And it's this moment where Anakin becomes this hero he was never able to be before. And we see the completion of Anakin's storyline all the way from the first three movies through the final movie in the first six movies. So far, I've already learned that the last three movies are not going to be it. They're not good. I'm not excited, but you got to finish them all. So I got two more to go. Why do I tell you this story? Because as we look at the development of Anakin, it compares nothing to the development we see come from Abraham in this story. It's one of the coolest character developments I think we get to see in our Bibles. The last 8 weeks, we've been watching Abraham in his battle with faith. He has these moments where he's a man of great faith, and then he has these other moments where it seems like he completely lacks it. One moment, God is like, hey, pick up everything and move and start walking until I tell you to stop. And Abraham's like, on it. In the next moment, Abraham is calling his wife his sister because he doesn't want Pharaoh to kill him to take her away from him. And so we see this faith tension in these moments in Abraham's life. But there's also one overarching faith tension in Abraham's life. And that's the tension of his promised offspring. Abraham and Sarah are promised from God a child. And for 25 years, they wait and wait and wait and nothing. And they're trying everything they can to have this baby that they so desire. They even go as far as to have Abraham sleep with one of his servants to try to fulfill this promise. And then finally, last week, Abraham and Sarah welcome into the world a baby boy, Isaac, and this promise is finally fulfilled for them. And it's actually surprising for them. It's so surprising, in fact, that when they finally have this kid, because they're so old, they laugh about it. Us? 100-year-old dude and a 90-year-old woman? No way. And so what we've got to spend a lot of time observing throughout Abraham's life is this idea of faith. It's become an obvious sub-theme throughout this section of Genesis. But today, we reach the Anakin saves Luke moment in Abraham's faith journey. Like he finishes his development in this area of his life. And so we're going to get right into it. We're going to start with verse 1 in Genesis 22. If you have your Bibles, you can go ahead and open them up, but I'll also have it on the screen behind me if you want to follow along. But we're going to start in Genesis 22, verse 1. It says, after these things, God, and you can underline this word, God tested Abraham. And I want to get in front of this really early on. What is it that God was testing? It's as simple as this. It was Abraham's faith. He's testing Abraham's faith. This is going to be where we start today. It's pretty much where we're going to end today too. Is with this point, testing strengthens our faith. That can be the thing you write in big bold letters at the top of your notes. Testing strengthens our faith. Difficulty, hardship, they strengthen our faith. And we're going to get to see today how strong Abraham's faith has become through all the testing he has been through. God has spent the last 25 years molding and shaping Abraham into a man of faith. And here today, we get to see that faith revealed. So, we start out the story. God calls Abraham, and Abraham responds how he did the very first time God called him. He says, here I am. And then God is going to go on to give Abraham what I believe is the worst possible task any father could ever be given. Now, we're going to pause right here for a second, okay? You know how Brad does the whole, like, hey, put that thing in your back pocket? You know what I'm talking about? He's like, hey, we're going to come back to it later. We're not doing a back pocket today because we got too many things to put in there. So, I need you guys to think of a backpack, all right? Throw on your backpacks, all right? And dads, think like diaper bag backpacks. Like, these are big backpacks because a lot of stuff's going to have to go in this because this text is dripping in good gospel news. It's written all over this text. And we're going to throw things into this bag because we're going to come back to them later tonight, today. But get ready to have that backpack ready because things are going in it. And this is going to be the first thing. This task, this idea that God gave Abraham the worst possible task any father could be given. What's that task? We see it in verse 2. God says to Abraham, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah. Throw that in your backpack, Moriah. It says, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. What? Like, think of this interaction between God and Abraham. Abraham, yeah. Hey, take your son, your only son. And Abraham's like, hey, by the way, thanks for that. You told Sarah and I a long time ago, like, you would give us a kid, and you came through. And God's like, let me finish. He says, take your son, Isaac, your only son, the one whom you love, and go up to Mount Moriah and offer him as a sacrifice. What? This has got to be so confusing to Abraham. This request, this task. He's got to be confused. I mean, Isaac, his son, was the one from which God was supposed to fulfill the promise to Abraham to make his offspring as numerous as the stars. And yet here, that very son that's supposed to fulfill that promise, he's told to go and sacrifice. What? Abraham has to feel like God is contradicting his own promises. And I'm sure Abraham's asking God, what are you doing? And Abraham doesn't know, but we know. He's testing him. He's testing Abraham. I love how one theologian puts it. It's helped me wrestle with the idea of testing, and I hope it helps you. And he says this quote. He says, our faith is not really tested until God asks us to bear what seems unbearable, do what seems unreasonable, and expect what seems impossible. Hill City, where is God testing your faith? Because he is, or he will. Maybe some of the tests in this room is fighting for your marriage. As you look around this room, there are marriages in this room on the verge of imploding. And could your test be to fight for your marriage? And yes, although it might seem unbearable, unreasonable, and impossible to spend one more day loving someone else more than you feel loved or serving someone else more than you feel like you're being served, but maybe that's your test, is to fight for that marriage to reconcile. I'm the church plant guy. We're heading to Corvallis in a couple years. I got to go there. Listen. Does it make sense for you to pick up your life, move it 30 hours across the country to a city you've never been to before and know hardly anything about? And here you may have built some comforts and some stability. Maybe you even got the house next to your family like you always wanted. And it seems unreasonable, unbearable, and impossible to travel across the country to go do something like that. But maybe that's your test. For some of you, maybe your test is just following Jesus. Maybe that's your test. I have a friend who came to school at Missouri State as an international student from India. And when he got here, he wasn't following Jesus, but he got plugged into a campus ministry. And through that campus ministry, he fell in love with Jesus. Who Jesus is, what he had done, and who he called him to be. But if you didn't know, if you're from India, rejecting your family's religion in India is not really an option. You don't do that. And if you do, you get cut off. Relationally, emotionally, financially, you get cut off. And so I imagine for him to follow Jesus felt unbearable, unreasonable, and impossible. And yet he recognized that what God had to offer him in his faith was far more than what his family could offer him. Where is God testing your faith? Here's maybe even a better question. Are you thankful for the test? Or are you frustrated by it? Do you want to run away from the test? This seems to be a pretty common modern day solution in response to testing. Following Jesus gets hard. It makes me do things that make myself or others around me feel uncomfortable. And so therefore, if that's happening, I'm just going to abandon my faith. Or I'm going to deconstruct my faith, meaning I get rid of all of the parts that make following Jesus hard and just take on the parts that are easy so I can have a comfortable faith. What that ultimately leads to most of the time is shipwrecking the faith, like we see in 1 Timothy, where it said to Timothy, hold faith in a good conscience. But by rejecting this, some have shipwrecked their faith. Hill City, can I invite you to maybe a different perspective of your testing? A Psalm 139 perspective where David says, search me, God, and know my heart. Right here, these two words, test me. David is requesting a test from God. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See there is any offense in me and lead me in the way everlasting. Aaron, why does David want to be tested? Better yet, why would God want to test him? Why would he want to test me? Doesn't he love me? Yes. And that's the exact reason he tests your faith. He wants to invite you into more faith because more faith means more intimacy. And God loves us enough to know that the best thing that we can have is more intimacy with him. even if that requires hardship and testing. And the test God gives Abraham is crazy. And I don't even think that's the craziest part. I think the craziest part is that Abraham obeys him. We get to verse 3, and I'm sure Abraham has had a real rough night's sleep. And he wakes up early the next morning. He gets his donkey ready. He gets all the men who are going to travel with him ready, including Isaac. He starts chopping up some wood, and then they start heading to where God's leading them. And we get to verse 4. And it says, on the third day, you can throw that in your backpack, third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. Then Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you. Let's talk about this three-day thing first. Fun fact about me, I don't hike. If you ask me to hike, I'll probably say no. I don't want to do it unless I'm absolutely required to go on a hike. Last weekend, I was on a bachelor party, and part of the itinerary is, hey, we're going to go on a hike. And you do crazy things for people you love. So I'm like, all right, let's get after it. We go on this hike, and here's something I learned on this hike because I don't hike, is hiking can get really boring really fast. Not in a bad way. But it leaves time for your mind to work. It leaves time for you to reflect. Or if you're with people, it leaves time to talk about dumb things you would never usually talk about. By the way, that was a 2.5-hour hike I went on. Abraham has a 3-day hike up a mountain with the son that he's walking with to offer as a sacrifice. Imagine that hike. Imagine what the kind of things Abraham would be thinking. And they get to where they're going, and I think verse 5 is huge in helping us understand Genesis 22. They get there, and he says, I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you. You can highlight those four words in your Bible if you're a highlight person. Worship and come again. Let's talk about worship. This is actually the first time in our whole Bible we see this word worship used. Right here in Genesis 22. And this isn't the type of worship that you do while you're in your car listening to the newest Shane and Shane album. This isn't the type of worship that we do even when we take the time to reflect on all of God's amazing attributes, that he's powerful and authoritative and perfect. It's not even that type of worship. The word used for worship here in Genesis 22 is the Hebrew word shaka. And that word means this is the type of worship of submission. That's Abraham's worship. And I think it requires our attention that the first form of worship ever expressed in our Bibles is the worship of submission to God's will. Sometimes worshiping God is just saying, your will, not mine, be done. But do you view that as your worship? Is that your worship? Our submission is not just obedience, it's also our worship. So he says, hey, we're going to go worship, and then we're going to come again to you. This is a really weird statement, but if you look and understand it, you realize, oh, there's Abraham's faith again. His faith, in those two words, that shows his faith. What do I mean? Abraham's been instructed, hey, take your son Isaac, go to this specific place where I'll show you, and offer him as a sacrifice. Abraham, Isaac, and their men have arrived to that place. It's in eyeshot. And Abraham says to the men he's with, hey, Isaac and I are going to go over there, and then both of us are going to come back to you. If they know what we know, that's a really weird thing for Abraham to say. It's like me telling my wife, hey, I'm going to take our dog to the vet and put her down, and both of us will be back in a couple hours. She's like, are you bringing a dead dog back to my house? This doesn't make sense, what Abraham's saying. So how does this reveal his faith? We actually learn the answer in Hebrews 11, 17 through 19. It says, by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. Right here, this next line. He, meaning Abraham, considered that God was able to even raise him from the dead. That's Abraham's faith revealed. Abraham knew he was returning with his son, even if that means God raising him from the dead. That's faith. And he's not on the other side of Jesus being raised from the dead like us. He's before we've even seen that happen. That's the kind of faith Abraham has here. He knows God has promised Isaac is going to be the one that God fulfills his promise to me to make my descendants more numerous than the stars in the sky. Somehow my son is coming back with me. And he can say that because all the testing he's been through has strengthened his faith to the point to where he can sacrifice the thing he loves most. So he tells the men he's with, hey, we're going to go and we're going to worship and we're both going to come back to you. And so Abraham and Isaac, they head alone on their way to this place to offer the sacrifice. And we see in Genesis 6 and 7 this scene where Abraham starts picking up the wood and placing it on Isaac's back to head to the altar place. Put this scene in your backpack. The scene of Abraham putting the wood on Isaac's back. After the wood's on Isaac's back, they start walking to the place of the altar. And Isaac has an important realization. They're walking. And Isaac looks around. He's like, hey, Dad. We have everything here for sacrifice, but one thing. The sacrifice. We're missing something. And here's Abraham's response in verse 8. He says, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. So they went, both of them together. There's Abraham's faith again. Faith that God will provide. Now, Abraham doesn't know how God is going to provide. But he knows God's made a promise and he will provide that promise. He's like, hey, I've seen him provide in crazier circumstances already. He brought a 100-year-old man and a 90-year-old woman a son. God can provide in this situation. It's Abraham's faith on display. So they're walking up this mountain, and here's where we reach the climax of this story. The pinnacle of the story. In verse 9 and 10, we see Abraham get to this place, and he starts to build this altar. He takes the wood off of Isaac's back and he lays it down onto the altar to prepare to make a burnt offering. Then he goes to the son and he binds his son up. He ties him up. And we could spend a whole sermon talking about the faith of Isaac here to allow his dad, where Isaac is the age to where he could physically push back at least. But he has faith not only in his dad but also in God to allow Abraham to bind him up. So Abraham binds Isaac up. He brings him to the altar and he lays him down on this altar he's created to offer Isaac up as a sacrifice. And then one of the most gut-wrenching scenes in the Bible. Abraham walks, he grabs his knife, comes before the altar that's laying before him. And if I'm Abraham, I'm taking a deep breath. Well, if I'm Abraham, I'm not doing this probably. But if I'm Abraham, I'm probably taking a deep breath. God hasn't redirected me. He hasn't told me to do something else. So Abraham raises the knife to plunge into the chest of his one and only son. The son him and Sarah have been waiting for 25 years. And just as he's about to put it through his son's chest, we get verse 11. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And Abraham said, here I am. Here I am. And the Lord said to him, Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. This here I am in this story is what gets me emotional as I read through this story. Tatum and I have the honor of welcoming a baby boy in about a month into this world. And we can't wait. And I already feel this deep desire to protect him at all costs. Do whatever I can to protect him. Like, I have already accepted if he ever gets bullied, I'm going to go to jail for kicking someone else's 10-year-old. Like, it's just going to happen. I want to protect him from the pains of this world so bad. And I know Abraham felt the same thing as he's holding little Isaac for the first time. He's looking at this newborn infant that he's waited for decades. And I know Abraham is thinking, I will do whatever it takes to protect you. And yet here, in this very scene, he's doing the opposite. He's laying that son that he swore that he wanted to protect. He's laying him down on the altar and doing the one thing he promised he would never do, and that's be willing to sacrifice and give pain to his son. And so I think when Abraham hears this, Abraham, that here I am is the most relieving thing he's ever said in his life. What I love about this here I am too is it's not just like a, yeah, hey, I'm right here. This here I am, the connotation of that is, hey, here I am willing to serve. And this isn't the first time Abraham has said that. In fact, that's the same statement he makes at the beginning of the story that he's going to make at the end of the story. Abraham was just as willing to pick up the knife as he was willing to drop the knife. God says to him, Abraham, now I know that you fear God. God shows his cards here. He reveals that this whole time what he's been after has been Abraham's heart. This story isn't about Abraham sacrificing his son. It's about Abraham's willingness to sacrifice his son, to give up the thing in which he loves most, to have the fear to recognize what God says, I do. Faith and fear in following Jesus go in tandem with one another. A couple weeks ago at Salt Company, we talked about this statement, fear of God, and what it means. How we defined it was fear of God is a healthy sense of reverence and awe for God, while at the same time having a healthy sense of my place in the universe. What does that mean? Healthy sense of my place in the universe means that I know I'm not God and he is. Healthy sense of my place in the universe means I'm not in control and he is. It's shachah, the worship of submission to God. And it's when you have that fear of God that recognizes his place over your place, is when you have great faith to do significantly faithful acts. And that's what happened here with Abraham. Abraham knew, Isaac is not mine. He's not my creation. I don't own him. He is God's. And what God has given, God is able to take away. And so when he asked me to do something that I would never want to do, he gets to do that. So what does Abraham do? He doesn't withhold. Not even his only son. Which for me, and I hope for you, allows us to ask a question. What are you withholding? Hill City, what are you unwilling to submit to God? Here's a game I think we like to play with God. You ready? Here you go, God. Here's 99% of my life. Here is almost everything. God's like, hey, what's behind the back? What do you mean? What's behind the back? You mean my money? Like, God, you can have a lot of things, but my money, I earned that. That goes into my pocketbook. That gets spent on what I want to spend it on. That goes generously how I desire to be generously, not how you tell me to be generously. Here, God, here's almost everything. Here's my plans. Well, like, not all my plans, because, like, I made this checklist when I was, like, 16 years old of exactly how I wanted my life to go. And it's went that way so far, and I know you're calling me to, like, give some of those things up, but, like, you can have everything else but those life plans. Let's try another door. Maybe something that's a little less, like, tangible. I think we do this with our emotions a lot. God, here's everything. Accept my hurt. Accept my resentment. That's mine to keep. You don't get my resentment towards my friends and my family or the church or maybe even you. I get to hold on to my hurt. That's not for you to hold. Everything else that's yours, but this is mine. This is my story. I was an only child till I was 9 years old. And when I was 9 years old, my family adopted my sister from Taipei, Taiwan. And part of them, the understanding they had to adopt her was that she had a heart defect. And that heart defect would make her developmentally delayed for a really long time. And so we bring back this newborn baby, and I'm excited at first. And I start to realize something after a while. Oh, I'm not the only chair anymore. Oh, actually, my sister's high needs, and so my needs aren't getting met like I want them to be anymore. So from that grew years and years of anger towards my parents, even at times to the point of hatred. And for the longest time, God, here's 95%. I'm going to keep my anger and a couple other things tucked away back here, but everything else is yours. And it wasn't until about 3 or 4 years ago where I had wise counsel invite me to submit even my anger before God. And now me and my parents, we've reconciled, we've restored those things. There's been apologies from both sides on that. But what that was doing, what this was doing, was limiting some of the intimacy that I could have with God. Because I was keeping something from him. And here's the funniest part. He knows what's back there. But he's kind. And he's not going to force you to give it to him. But he certainly is going to welcome you to. What if this church was 1,500 people walking through life like this? Willing to submit everything. All of it. What are you withholding from God? So God stops Abraham and then does exactly what Abraham thought he would do. He provides a better way. We get to verse 13, and Abraham looks behind him, and of course, what does he see? A ram stuck in a thicket. If you don't know what a thicket is, it's like a bush with no leaves and thorns. You can throw that thicket in the backpack. But they see this ram, and Abraham and Isaac, they go get this ram, and they replace Isaac's place on the altar with this ram. Throw that in your backpack. And we get to verse 14, and Abraham has like this moment of like, yes. And in verse 14, it says, so Abraham called the name of the place, the Lord will provide. As it is said to this day, on the mount of the Lord, it shall be provided. God provided for Abraham. God provided for Abraham, and Abraham had faith that God would provide. Faith in God's character, faith in God's promises, faith in God's provision. To the point where Abraham names that very mountain, the Lord will provide. But Hill City, one of the things I love about this story is that God didn't just provide for Abraham on that mountain. It's also the same place where God provided for us. All right, I need everybody to take off their backpacks. Bring them around front, open them up. People who are serving communion while everyone else is opening up their backpacks, I need you guys to go ahead and start to get ready to get in place to take communion. All right, we got our backpacks out? Okay. I need you to reach in there and pull out things like God giving Abraham the worst possible task any father could ever be given. What was that task? To take his only son, whom he loved, and offer him as a sacrifice. I need you to take out of that backpack Abraham taking the wood off of Isaac's back, placing the wood on Isaac's back. Take out of that backpack Mount Moriah, the place that Abraham names the Lord will provide. Why are we taking that out? Most people agree that Mount Moriah is the same place in which Golgotha existed. Aaron, what's Golgotha? It's the place where God sent his one and only son whom he loved. It's the place before where Jesus walked there. He had a crown of thorns placed on his head, probably made out of a thicket. It's the place that God walked to as he carried a cross made out of wood to on his back. And it's the place where once he got there, they nailed and bound him to that cross. And it's the place where they raised that cross up. And it was as if a knife was being brought before his chest to go through his chest. But yet, this time on Golgotha, no one stopped the Father from plunging the knife into the chest. This son's life was taken. And for 3 days, just like Isaac was as good as dead for 3 days as he walked up that mountain, for 3 days, Jesus laid in that tomb. And then 3 days later, rose again from it. And just like the ram replaced Isaac's place on the altar, Hill City, Jesus replaces our place on the altar. Listen to me. If you're like me and you picture the story of Abraham and Isaac and your gut and your stomach are just turning, imagining being in Abraham's position, if that is you, that's exactly what God did for you. Is what Abraham was willing to do to his own son. See, the story of Abraham's faith in God to save Isaac from imminent death isn't just a story for us to celebrate and to look to as an example. That is the subplot of this story. But this story and its intention is meant to point us to faith in God to save us from imminent death through Jesus. Listen, there's testing that's been endured in this room. And there's testing still to come for everyone in this room. Here's my hope. May that testing not shipwreck your faith. May it not weaken it, but may it reveal it. May that testing strengthen your faith. And may we be thankful for that faith and thankful for those tests. Our testing gives us an opportunity to step into greater intimacy with our very Creator. Let me pray. Dear Lord, thank you. I don't think there's any other words to say besides thank you. You did something that none of us could imagine doing to our own, and yet you did it. So thank you. Amen.